Kevin, for leading us in those songs. Men, for your prayers. Justin, for your thoughts at the table. And for all that are here gathered together in collective worship. We're going to continue with our series in David this morning. I restarted it again last Sunday, and a number of you were so kind to tell me you've missed David too, and so I'm thankful to hear that. We started David at the end of 2020, and so it's been quite a lengthy series, and this is number 55, if you're keeping track. So if you missed last week, it's already online if you'd like to catch up. If you missed more than last week, all of them are online, and you can listen that way as well. I mentioned that I felt like I owed David an apology. I feel like I've grown that close to him and to put his life on hold for so many months. I do not intend to do that again until we're done, but you know how intentions go. But as you saw last week too, we did something different Sunday night, so we'll mix it in from time to time, but I do want to keep the string of David's lessons going. I've been able to fill two booklets of this with his life. Each lesson always ends up being three pages. Oh. Someone has told me I should put this into a book, and maybe one day that could be the case. But as I've been doing, I don't use any charts for this series. I just want the narrative, the expository telling of the story to paint the picture in your mind's eye, and I'll do my best to put the paint to the canvas. We are in 2 Samuel chapter 19. 2 Samuel chapter 19. And we had made it, I believe, through about the first 14 verses last Sunday. That lesson was called Breaking the Deadlock. So the title this morning for the lesson is called The Return of the King. Now, in case you were thinking I took my title from J.R. Tolkien's series, well, when you read the first line in verse 15, you'll see that that's only half true. So there in verse 15, it says, "Then the king returned and came to the Jordan. And Judah came to Gilgal to meet the king, to escort the king across the Jordan." The return of the king has started. David is being brought back. We see amongst the crowd, verse 16, and Shimei, the son of Gerar, a Benjamite, who was from Bahurim, hurried and came down with men of Judah to meet King David. There were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons, and his 20 servants with him. And they went over the Jordan before the king. David has been called back to the throne. At the conclusion of the battle that sent David's son to the grave. And in what way will a grief-stricken king return? With bitterness? Anger? Revenge? I mean, you might think, if something like this had happened to you, how would you return? All these people, in essence, had voted you out. And now they come groveling, saying, "We're sorry for our mistake. You should never have been voted out." No, we're not going to see David return in bitterness and anger and revenge. Rather, we will see in a very Jesus-like fashion. When he returned to Jerusalem after his resurrection, he came with healing and forgiveness in his wings. But we're going to see this immediately put to the test for David. We're going to see it put to the test by one named Shimei. You remember Shimei? Well, it's been a long time. Let's go ahead and turn back to chapter 16 and remind ourselves of who Shimei was. He was a low-down scoundrel that came to David, kicked him while he was down. I think that was the title of the lesson, being kicked while you're down. And he comes to David while David's being ousted out of Jerusalem and running for his life. And there in verse 5 of 2 Samuel 16, it says, "Now when King David came to Baram, there was a man from the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gerar, coming from there. And he came out cursing continuously as he came. And he threw stones at David and at all the servants of the king David. And all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. Also Shimei said thus when he cursed, 'Come out, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue. The Lord has brought upon you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom, your son. So now you are caught in your own evil because you are a bloodthirsty man.'" And one of David's captains, one of his generals, Abishai, comes and says, "Let me just go and take his head off." And David says, "Don't you dare. What have I to do with you, sons of Zeruiah?" It's almost as if we're cut from a different cloth. You leave him alone. Who's to know if the Lord is allowing him to offer these curses that I deserve for my actions? Verse 12, "It may be that the Lord will look upon my affliction and that the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing this day." And as David and his men went along the road, Shimei went along the hillside opposite him and cursed as he went and threw stones at him and kicked up dust as they went out of Jerusalem. Well, now David has won the battle. He's returning, and guess who's one of the first to come back? There in 2 Samuel 19, verse 18, "Then a ferry boat went across to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. Now Shimei, the son of Gerar, fell down before the king when he had crossed the Jordan." There he is. He falls down before the king. Well, how's the king going to respond? Keep reading verse 19. "He said to the king, 'Do not let my lord impute iniquity to me, or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord the king left Jerusalem, that the king should take it to heart.'" Don't remember. How could he forget? Don't take it to heart. How could he not? Right? I mean, there was a lot of vitriol and fury in his cursings. And the rocks, and you can imagine the people that he hit. The dust being kicked up. Verse 20, "For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. Therefore, here I am, the first to come today of all the house of Joseph and to go down to meet my lord the king." So he's the first to fall before David's feet as the king returns. And I have to say, the rational side of me wonders, if David didn't win the battle, would Shimei have searched far and wide to find David that he might offer this kind of confession? But I know that's not the circumstance. David did win the battle. And we see Shimei does come and confess, even if it is out of self-preservation. But we may fairly ask, if Jesus did not return from the grave, how many would confess their wrongdoing and being involved in his crucifixion as well? You see, the victory changes everything. It did for Jesus, and it does for David as well. And Shimei goes from hurling rocks and insults to hurling himself before David and his feet. Imagine being Shimei. You know what you've done. You know what you deserve. What will David do? What would you do? You know, we're not left in doubt of knowing what somebody would do. Abishai again. What does Abishai say? Verse 21, Abishai the son of Zeruiah answered and said, "Shall not Shimei be put to death for this? Because he cursed the Lord's anointed." See, Abishai has never seen a head he didn't want removed, right? And I've offered it once, he turned me down. Now let's do it this way. Let's do it this time. He cursed the Lord's anointed. That's who you are, David. No way, David. Don't even think about forgiveness for this character. He kicked you while you were down. Now he's down. Kick him back. Abishai, you know what he'd make for David? He'd make one of those good devils on the shoulder for David. That's what he would do. And you know David knows it. Look at David's reaction in verse 22. And David said, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah?" Again, we're cut from the different cloth. "That you should be adversaries to me today." That word adversaries is the Hebrew word satan. La satan, where you get the word Satan. He says, you're like Satan to me. Tempting me to do this very thing. This is his "get behind me, Satan." Remember when Jesus had to say that over in Matthew chapter 16? Hold your place there in 2 Samuel 19. There in Matthew 16, when Jesus tells them his plans of the future, and Peter tries to rebuke and stop Jesus from fulfilling those plans. In Matthew 16, there verse 21, "From that time Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and scribes and be killed and raised the third day." That's the gospel, right? He had to do that to save men's souls. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Far be it from you, Lord. This shall not happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan." It's the same word, adversary. "Behind me, Satan. You're an offense to me, for you're not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." Peter, unknowingly, trying to talk Jesus out of the path of pardon, out of the path of forgiveness. Just like Abishai was trying to do for David. To talk him out of the path of pardon and forgiveness for Shimei. "Get behind me, Satan." David goes on to say back there in 2 Samuel 19, second half of verse 22, "Shall any man be put to death today in Israel? For do I not know that today I'm king over Israel?" This is a day of life and not of death. It's already been enough death. I come to give life. We made that comparison last week of Jesus when he returned back to Jerusalem, brought salvation. And now David, this king, when he returns back to Jerusalem, brings the same. No one's going to die today. He says, "For do I not know that today I'm king over Israel?" I realize my position is now secure. They've, in essence, voted me back in. They realize they've made a mistake. Shimei is not going to threaten my throne. He does not need to die. Not today. So verse 23, "Therefore the king said to Shimei, 'You shall not die.' And the king swore to him." Wow. After what Shimei did to him? I think of the song, "Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like Shimei." Remember, I said, imagine being like Shimei. I wonder if David could do that. Because that phrase, when he fell before David's feet and said, "I have sinned," might ring a bell. Because not too many years ago, David falls before Nathan's feet with those exact same words, "I have sinned." Perhaps it resonated with David. Have we ever, like Shimei, maybe said something purposely to offend another? And we know that that person is hung up on it. The ball's in our court, right, to make things right. It's our move to try and right the wrong. You remember that feeling? That's tough, isn't it? Say, I need to go and talk to, I need to apologize, I need to ask for their forgiveness. And let me tell you, it's even tougher when we know we are 100% in the wrong. That's how Shimei feels. And if you've ever felt that way, you know how Shimei feels. David's felt that way. See, forgiveness comes easier when we remember times in our past. Past where we failed and we were forgiven. The forgiven make good forgivers, or they should at least. That's something that's talked about a lot in the Gospels. David knew what it meant to be forgiven by the Lord. He knew that well. When he deserved to die, like Shimei. And that's why the Lord tells us, we even talked about the model prayer, about forgiving those that have sinned against us. As we have been forgiven by God. In fact, he says if we do not do that, we should not expect to be forgiven by God. Jesus even tries to get through Peter with that. As Peter says, you know, maybe I should forgive my brother 7 times, right? I'm doubling the traditional amount and adding one. And the Lord says, no, Peter, you don't understand forgiveness. And he shares the parable of the one that was forgiven of a debt they couldn't pay back in 10,000 lifetimes. And that's God forgiving us of our sins. And then someone comes along and just and gives an infraction against us, a minor thing, and we want to hold it over their heads. And that first master said, wait a second, I forgave you everything. 10,000 lifetimes worth. You couldn't forgive that little thing? That's not right. Now we're going to talk more about forgiveness later on and how we might be able to cultivate it and foster it in our lives. More on that in a minute. But David, we can see, is definitely a shining example to us so far. But we might also see that he's about to be tested again. So back to our story. Back to our story there, verse 24. It says, now Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. How does he meet the king? He's not cared for his feet, nor trimmed his mustache, nor washed his clothes from the day that the king departed until the day he returned in peace. Now Mephibosheth, who is that guy again? Well, it's been a while, so let's go and remind ourselves. Back to chapter 16. Back to chapter 16, Mephibosheth was Jonathan's son. And David wanted to do good to him because he was the house of Saul, as David had promised Jonathan. And so he invites Mephibosheth into the house. You're going to eat from my table continually. I'm going to take care of you. Mephibosheth says, I'm not worthy of this. I'm like a dead dog. And David says, do not worry. I'm going to take care of you. Well, when David now is needing to be taken care of, and he's on the run for his life, leaving Jerusalem because of the coup d'etat of Absalom, Ziba, Mephibosheth's servant, arrives at the scene when David is fleeing. And this is what happens. Verse 1 of chapter 16. When David was a little past the top of the mountain, there was Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, who met him with a couple of saddled donkeys. And on them, 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, 100 summer fruits, and a skin of wine. And the king said to Ziba, what do you mean by to do with these things? And so Ziba said, the donkeys are for the king's household to ride on. I've brought you some transportation, king. And the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine for those who are faint in the wilderness to drink. And the king said, and where is your master's son? That's Mephibosheth. And Ziba said to the king, indeed, he is staying in Jerusalem. For he said, today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom to my father and to me. king is hurt by this, and in a knee-jerk reaction says to Ziba, "Here, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is now yours." And Ziba said, "I humbly bow before you that I might find favor in your sight, my lord, O king." And now, as the return of the king is happening back to Jerusalem, Mephibosheth meets him on the way. And how is he described, right? He's described as a torn up person. And you know, if all this thing was true, what Ziba said, Mephibosheth indeed would be in big, big trouble. But he comes back before David and shows up with a long beard and stinky clothes, feet as dirty as ever. And by the way, back there in chapter 19, 24, Mephibosheth is not saying, "David, look, I have got this long beard, and I've got these stinky clothes, and I've got these dirty feet." He's not saying anything. It's the narrator. The narrator's telling us that these are the facts. This is how he appears before David. In essence, to say you can't fake this appearance quickly or at the last moment. It takes some time to grow a beard like that and to make clothes as stinky as that. This is a man who has been in mourning. But David has some questions for Jonathan's son, for whom he cared for whom he ate with at his table. So David says in verse 25, we're back in 2 Samuel 19 now, verse 25. "So it was when he had come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said to him, 'Why? Why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth?'" Right? That's the question of questions. And I detect hurt in David's voice, as that's the first question he asks. So Mephibosheth, looking like a ragged scarecrow, begins to speak in verse 26. And he answered, "My lord, O king, my servant deceived me. For your servant said, 'I will saddle a donkey for myself that I may ride on it and go to the king, because your servant is lame.'" See, right? It's obvious. Being lame, he needed transportation. And he had plans to have the donkey saddled that he might go out and ride along with the king. But you remember how Ziba showed up in chapter 16? Ziba showed up with a string of saddled donkeys. It was as if he left Mephibosheth behind. He took the very donkey that he could ride on. And he says, "Hey, David, these are for you. These are for all you guys to ride on." And he put Mephibosheth at a disadvantage. It's like taking a guy's wheelchair and saying, "Where were you? Why couldn't you come?" "The guy stole my wheelchair. I couldn't." Verse 27, "And he has slandered your servant to my lord the king. All those things he said that I said I didn't say." That's what slander is. It's a false accusation. It's not true. He's lying. But he says, "My lord, the king is like the angel of God. Therefore, do whatever is good in your eyes." He told lies about me, saying that I wanted the kingdom. Now the kingdom's returned back to me and to my household. Does it really work that way? Absalom was the one that was coming to the throne. Most likely, Mephibosheth's life was even greater danger if Absalom was coming to the throne. "Do I look like I was ready to receive the kingdom? Do I look all shaved and trimmed and smelling good?" No. No. He looks like a homeless person. Verse 28, "For all my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king." That's what incoming dynasties do to outgoing dynasties. They wipe out anybody else could be a potential threat to the throne. It's exactly what Absalom would have done to David and his household if Absalom would have won. And Mephibosheth knows that. Normally, you would have wiped out the entire household of Saul. "But instead, you set your servant among those who eat at your own table. Therefore, what right have I to still cry out anymore to the king. You see, Mephibosheth is still that same humble person that David first met way back when. He's Jonathan's son. But he never felt that he was deserving of anything. I just have to flip back there to chapter 9, because I was always so touched within by the words of Mephibosheth and the kindness of God that David showed to him when he called and asked for someone from Saul's house, from Jonathan's house, that he might show the kindness of God. And David tells him that it's going to be you, Mephibosheth. And there in 2 Samuel 9, there verse 7, so David said to him, "Do not fear, for I will surely show you kindness for Jonathan, your father's sake, and will restore to you all the land of Saul, your grandfather, and you shall eat bread at my table continually." Then he bowed himself, that's Mephibosheth, and said, "What is your servant that you should look upon such a dead dog as I?" He was humble in his heart. Never saw himself as deserving, though he was part of a monarch's family. And this, when I turn to chapter 19, sounds like the exact same man still. But this puts David in a bind. Because of David's knee-jerk reaction earlier in chapter 16, the first time, he gave all the land to Ziba. And he recognizes that ultimately this becomes a he said kind of argument. And he's not an omniscient God. He's not the omniscient God who can know everything 100% for sure. So verse 29, back in 2 Samuel 19, there verse 29, the king said, "Why do you speak any more on this on your matters?" He's stuck, right? So he says, "I've said, you and Ziba divide the land." So from 100% to Ziba, he says, "I'm just going to divide it 50-50 right down the middle." No doubt David's hurt. He's tired. He's been on the run for his life. His son has just been killed in battle. And he's just ready to be home. But he sees Mephibosheth in his sorrow. And David mercifully does a 50-50 split of all that there is. Because he realizes that if Mephibosheth is true, then certainly he doesn't deserve to lose everything. And it's very possible if Ziba would go to this length and he gives everything back to Mephibosheth, that he might try and do something else again. So just divide it in half if Mephibosheth is true. If Ziba is true, well, nah. I don't think so. I'll be honest. I just don't think so. Because of after the verdict, notice how Mephibosheth responds there in verse 30. Then Mephibosheth said to the king, "Rather, let him take it all, inasmuch as my lord the king has come back in peace to his own house." That reminds me so much like the woman and the women that came before Solomon, and they're arguing over whose the baby it is. And it's a she said kind of argument. And so Solomon says, "Cut the baby in half. Just split it 50-50. And the woman said, "No, no. Just give her the baby." And that was the woman whose baby it actually was. The one that said, "No, no, give it to her." Now Mephibosheth, in some ways, is saying a very similar thing. Rather give it to them all. You see, "David, I'm just glad you're back. I just want you to know that I love you. I was never in it for the money." See, Mephibosheth never forgot the kindness of God that David had shown him. And he said, "All I want you to know, David, is that I'm thankful for you. I would never betray you." See, David was Mephibosheth's hero, that he could show such kindness to him who was lame in his feet. Mephibosheth acts the very opposite way that the elder brother did when the younger brother returned in Luke 15. You ever think about that? He's so glad, so thankful for David's return. He's not at all upset that supposedly he'd lose the kingdom. That's as Ziba accused him. He's glad David's back. And he doesn't need anything else. Let me just eat with the king. But one thing is true. Either way, David was going to be forgiving to at least one person and overlook a personal injury by at least one person, right? Because someone's not being truthful in this whole mix. David, again, is a forgiving king. See, this is the kind of heart that we want. This series is titled David Having a Heart for God. This is the kind of heart David has. This is the kind of heart that we want to have. So that we might be like a man after God's own heart. How can we be more like David in regards to forgiveness? Well, number one, I'd advise that you and I develop thicker skin. David was insulted like no tomorrow by Shimei. But he had thick skin. You and I ought to pray for that more often. Lord, help me not to be so sensitive. Lord, help me to keep my balance so that the slightest push does not send me toppling over. I tell you today, the household of God could use some thicker skin. Number two, try to understand where the offender's coming from. Try to see where they're coming from. You know, that's what our Lord did on the cross when He said, God, do not hold this sin against them, for they know not what they are doing. He understands where they're coming from, why they're doing these very things. So try to see beyond the offense and find the little boy inside the man or the little girl inside the woman that is lashing out at you. Maybe David could see some of his old self cornered and scared, and he had pity for Shimei, Ziba, and Mephibosheth. Number three, recall times in our own life when we needed forgiveness. David once stood condemned to die. And so did these men. And he forgave them as he was forgiven. Jesus said, you and I must be able to do that. Recall times in our lives where we needed forgiveness and were forgiven by God. So what have we got so far? Number one, develop thicker skin. Number two, try to understand where the offender's coming from. Number three, recall times in our life when we needed forgiveness. And number four, verbalize it. Verbalize it. Communicate it to the one that has offended you. Don't just think it. Spoken forgiveness is therapeutic to the offender and removes all doubt. This is having a heart for God. All three of these men went home that day understanding that the king has pardoned me. I am forgiven. But silence, resentment, grudge, plotting to manipulate, none of that pleases God, nor does it work. If we want to have a heart for God, then we're going to cultivate freely forgiving. David is a great example for us in that, as is Jesus. Well, as the king returns, one comes that doesn't need forgiveness for offense. Rather, it's just like an old friend coming to escort him home. Barzillai. There in 2 Samuel 19, verse 31. And Barzillai, the Gileadite, came down from Rogelim and went across the Jordan with the king to escort him across the Jordan. Now Barzillai was a very aged man, 80 years old. So he's living on borrowed time, according to Psalm 90, verse 10. And he had provided the king with supplies while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very rich man. And the king said to Barzillai, come across with me, and I will provide for you while you are with me in Jerusalem. But Barzillai said to the king, "How long have I to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am today 80 years old. Can I discern between the good and the bad? Can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any longer the voice of singing men and singing women? Why then should I, your servant, be a further burden to the Lord the king?" He says, "I'm towards the end of my journey. I'm towards the end of my life. I'm 80 years old." He says, "My senses are dulled. I wouldn't be able to appreciate the finer things of life, such as kings receive. The food, the music. It would just be wasted on me. I'm a simple man with simple needs." So he says in verse 36, "Your servant will go a little way across the Jordan with the king. And why should the king repay me with such a reward? Please let your servant turn back, that I may die in my own city, near the grave of my father and mother. Let me just go home after this walk with the king. That's where I'd like to die. Simply and quietly, by the graves of my relatives." But he says, verse 37, continuing, he says, "But here's your servant Chimham. Let him cross over with my lord the king, and do for him what seems good to you." And the king answered, "Chimham shall cross over with me, and I will do for him what seems good to you. Now whatever you request of me, I will do for you." So Barzillai asked for Chimham to go. Most likely this is his son. It's referred to later. He and his family is referred to later in 1 Kings and even 400 years later in the book of Jeremiah. David had kept his word. David had done good to Chimham. And so he's in essence saying, "Let my son go in my place. Do for him as you would for me." So the king says, "Sure. That will be fine." And there, verse 39, "Then all the people went over the Jordan. And when the king had crossed over, the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him and returned to his own place. Now the king went on to Gilgal, and Chimham went on with him. And all the people of Judah escorted the king, and also half the people of Israel." What a beautiful scene. And the king kissed Barzillai, said, "It's okay. Die in peace, my friend. Go home." And Chimham goes on with the king. And when you think about it, do we not all want that for our children? When we go home to glory, but for them to go on with the king? Knowing that the king will bless them better than we ever could in life. Take care of them better than we ever could in life. Care for them ever better than we ever could in our lives. I'll go home. You go on with the king. And one day we'll see each other again. What a beautiful scene. Unfortunately, that's not how the text ends, though, in chapter 19. We go from a beautiful scene to an ugly scene where you see some bickering and fighting and arguing. In verse 41, "Just then all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, 'Why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen you away and brought the king, his household, and all David's men with him across the Jordan?'" What? You didn't wait for all of us? All the other tribes to be involved in this re-coronation of the king? And so they begin to fight. If you remember in the story last week, Israel was the one that actually decided first. It was Judah was the trying to come lately. And then Judah's ushering them on in. Verse 42, "So all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, 'Because the king is a close relative of ours. Why then are you angry over this matter? Have we ever eaten at the king's expense, or has he given us any gift?'" Verse 43, the men of Israel argue back, answered the men of Judah and said, "We have 10 shares in the king, therefore we also have more right to David than you. Why then do you despise us? Were we not the first to advise bringing back our king? Right? So Judah said in one corner, well, he's our blood, he's our flesh and blood. He's you know, a Judahite just like we are. And then the other tribes of Israel are saying, hey, look, there's at least 10 of us, though. If we talk about David being the pie chart, we got more of the pie. It's only right that there'd be more of us here. In fact, we were the first ones to call him back. And yet they keep on fighting. And the Bible goes on to say, yet the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. This is pettiness. It's pettiness. And none of them are saying, well, he's God's anointed, and that's why we need him back on the throne, and back on the throne right away. None of them are saying that. None of this fight should have happened in the first place. But all they mention is their own self-serving reasons to be connected to the king. It's so sad. And in this bickering and bitterness and this fighting, this infighting, it's brewing up another civil war, another fight to come that we'll see in chapter 20. Lives will be lost because of it. Oh, angry words, let them never from the tongue unbridled slip. You never know what they could cause. Well, as we bring this to a close, I would encourage you, encourage myself, let us be more like the calm, anointed king than these petty tribes. Let us consider what we say and the purpose of what we seek to accomplish by what we say. Is it for the good of the king? Or is it for the good of ourselves? Lots to learn in the return of the king, wouldn't you say? Friend, are you ready for our king to return? You know he's coming back one day. Have we fled to him for forgiveness like Shimei, falling at the feet of Jesus, obeying the gospel, repenting and being baptized for the remission of our sins? Have we told him we need him back in our lives and in our homes like Mephibosheth did to David? And do we walk and do we talk with the king and use our resources to his glory like Barzillai did? And do we take our sons and daughters to the king like Barzillai did? Where are we at with our king? He is returning one day. It's best to know where you stand before that day. The return of the king is happening one day. And so, dear friend, respond to him today. Won't you come while we stand and while we sing? Stand at the bar on high. Someday your record you'll see. Someday you'll answer the question of life. What will your answer be? What will it be? What will it be? Where will you spend your eternity? What will it be? Oh, what will it be? What will your answer be?